97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
Mark Reardon.
All the spending, all the regulating, turning off the oil and gas spigots, all these things that chickens have come home to roost.
The Mark Reardon Show.
You can lead a man to the presidency, but you can't make him think.
Real begotten gains of Putin's kleptocracy.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
Beautiful, beautiful day in St. Louis. Unfortunately, we're down one team member, and we weren't sure if this was going to happen, but Sue had alluded to this yesterday. She had jury duty. Fred and I live in the county, right?
Right.
Wait a second, Fred, I got the wrong mic on. Test two.
Right.
Take two. Fred and I live in the county, and Sue may or may not be living in the county soon. I can't confirm or deny. But when you live in the city, you essentially get called for jury duty approximately every 3 weeks. And she wasn't sure what was going to happen. And the last message I heard from her is, they're taking me up to a courtroom. So I don't know what that means. Fred, did you know, is she there today and tomorrow? Usually, it's a two-day thing.
Usually, it is a two-day. But, okay. She went up for voir dire. So she's going to be, questioned whether she can be, fair.
I hope she gets on a jury, right? Well, and then what happens, and I think this happened to her last time, when I was called last time, I remember I was in a pool, right? And they were getting ready. In fact, I think we were in the middle of the voir dire. I like how you say it better than I do, though. Voir dire. Like, how would Jane say it? She's an attorney. But then, what happens, and this happened with Sue, Fred, a lot of times, the system's not very efficient this way. They start to pick the jury, and the lawyers are working behind the scenes. Hey, you don't really want to go to this trial, right? Because you're going to be convicted. So then they cut a deal at the last minute. And then the jury's picked, you can go home. So that happens quite a bit. So we'll see. Hopefully we'll get Sue back tomorrow afternoon. Just as a quick programming note, I had to take Friday off just because I screwed something up. And I explained that yesterday. But I'm going with my daughter to do a little deer hunting. They have a special doe season this weekend. And I think Sue might be off that day as well. Fred, do you know?
I don't know.
I don't know. That's what I think she told me.
So both on Friday?
You may want to take that day off, Fred. I'm just saying right now. You're sick on Friday, right? We got a bunch of things to get to here. Most of it's going to be about CBS News in a moment, but let me kind of promote the rest of it. I told you this last week. One of the first people I thought of when it came to North Carolina and the devastating damage. And by the way, we're going to spend a lot of time on Milton this afternoon as well. But I thought of Kenny Wallace because of all the friends he has out there and the time that he spent in North Carolina doing NASCAR stuff before he moved back here to St. Louis. So we're going to hook up with him here in a matter of minutes talking about some things related to North Carolina. Fred's going to handle Fred's news in the next hour. I mentioned this yesterday. I'm very much looking forward to getting an update from Alana Austin, who's a parent in Kirkwood. There was at Knifer Middle School, there was an incident earlier this year in August at, it was like the parents' night to meet the teachers. And there was a teacher at Knifer that had a Palestinian flag and not an Israeli flag. And there was a mother of a student, Alana, who said, hey, maybe you want to fly both. And he not only didn't want to do that, but he denied the Holocaust, et cetera. There's been an investigation into this. And, I think I was candid about this yesterday. I talked about this, Fred, as you know, for several days in a row in August. And then it just sort of, everyone went quiet on me. So we're going to get new information here this afternoon. Sue's going to miss this. It's her friend Steve Jervey, who used to be here in St. Louis at Channel 30 from 1994 to 1998, and then spent a lot of time and has been in Tampa since then. He was the chief meteorologist at WFLA in Tampa. He's kind of been our go-to hurricane guy down in Florida for the past couple of years. Sue mentioned him 2 years ago. And he's been great. Well, in this particular situation, he is in the path of this hurricane, right?
Yeah, I felt kind of bad booking him for an interview because I texted him and said, hey, can you join us later today? He said, sure, as long as I've got everything ready and things are fine. And I was like, okay, kind of need a commitment, which I kind of felt bad to say.
Right.
Because he's dealing with a hurricane.
Is he evacuating?
I don't know what he's doing.
Well, we're going to find out, right? Yeah. We're going to find out. So that's coming up at 4:45 this afternoon. Our friend Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago at 5:07. And then Chris Elston. I love Chris, Billboard Chris. He's gone around the world, literally gone around the world trying to stop some of this gender-affirming care nonsense. And he spoke before the United Nations a couple of weeks ago, which I thought was really interesting. And I have not spoken with him since then. sense. So he's going to join us in the 5 o'clock hour. All right, let's get to CBS News. Fred, I took the time here today to watch the special 60 Minutes. I was watching the Chiefs last night. I had no interest in watching 60 Minutes and Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. By the way, as bad as Kamala was, he was worse, Tim Walz. And if it went on any longer, I think that would have been devastating. But there is a fascinating story related to CBS News that is coming out today. And I have amazing audio that I want to share. And I have to kind of go back to the beginning because Tony DeCoppo, who is the anchor of CBS This Morning with Gail King, and they have someone else on there.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name. But anyway, DeCoppo's been at CBS for a while. I think isn't he even married to one of the other CBS folks over there?
I don't know.
I think he is, or another journalist. He's Jewish. It's important to recognize. So there's a guy by the name of Ta-Nehisi Coates, who is a liberal whack job. He's been out there writing, supposedly as a journalist, for years. And he's got a new book out called The Message, which is very much a one-sided polemic against Israel. And he describes the book as an effort to debunk the complexities that journalists invoke to obscure Israel's occupation. And he had complained. Barry Weiss and the Free Press is all over this story, and they're doing a great job with it. The coverage has also included the New York Times and some other legacy publications, and I'm going to explain why here in a second. So Coates said in an interview with New York Magazine that the argument that the conflict was complicated was horse blank, that was how defenders of slavery and segregation described these plagues a century ago. It's complicated, he said, when you want to take something from somebody. So then DeCoppo asked him about it, and he got very pointed, and that's when things kind of got interesting, because CBS News, and this is all fascinating, because when I feel like the audience is rather educated here, especially on media bias. I talk about media bias a lot. And ladies and gentlemen, when you hear the audio that I'm about to play to you from an editorial meeting that was recorded yesterday morning and somebody leaked the audio, you're going to say, wait a second, this is the same network that hosted the vice presidential debate last week that teamed up on J.D. Vance? Because they're going to try to make the case that they're unbiased at CBS News, and they take this very seriously when someone interjects their opinion, etc. So let me first play you the interview on CBS, and this is what happened last week with Coates.
Ta-Nehisi, I want to dive into the Israel-Palestine section of the book. It's the largest section of the book. Mm. And I have to say, when I read the book, I imagine if I took your name out of it, took away the awards and the acclaim, took the cover off the book, the publishing house goes away, the content of that section would not be out of place in the backpack of an extremist.
That's a pretty, that's a pretty hardcore way to get into that interview. Right now, one of the things that you have to realize here is that this is a book that doesn't include even the mention of the word Hamas. It doesn't include the word Fatah or Palestinian Islamic Jihad or Hezbollah or Iran. Not one time in this book does it mention that. Not one time. So DeCoppo's, asking Coates some good questions here, considering how one-sided he is.
And so then I found myself wondering, why does Ta-Nehisi Coates, who I've known for a long time, read his work for a long time, very talented, smart guy, leave out so much? Mm. Why leave out that Israel is surrounded by countries that want to eliminate it? Why leave out that Israel deals with terror groups that want to eliminate it?
Mm.
Why not detail anything of the first and the second Intifada, the cafe bombings, the bus bombings, the little kids blown to bits? And is it because you just don't believe that Israel, in any condition, has a right to exist?
Yeah, Coates, So, he answers the question the best way that he sees fit.
Well, I would say the perspective that you just outlined, there is no shortage of that perspective in American media. That's the first thing I would say. I am most concerned always with those who don't have a voice, with those who don't have the ability to talk. I have asked repeatedly in my interviews whether there is a single network, mainstream organization in America with a Palestinian American bureau chief or correspondent who actually has a voice to articulate their part of the world.
Okay, so, some of that is not completely off base, because I think of it in terms of some of the things that I've suggested. I've said even recently quite a bit, and I've said this for years, that, man, it'd be kind of nice if CBS News or the New York Times or another big legacy media outlet had a bureau in Missouri or in Oklahoma to better understand, what's really happening in the flyover state. So I understand what Coates is saying there.
I wrote a 260-page book. It is not a treatise on the entirety of the conflict between the Palestinians and the Israelis.
But if you were to read this book, you would be left wondering, why does any of Israel exist? What a horrific place, committing horrific acts on a daily basis. So I think the question is central and key. If Israel has a right to exist, and if your answer is no, then I guess the question becomes, why do the Palestinians have a right to exist?
Answer,
why do 20 different Muslim countries have a right to exist?
My answer is that no country in this world establishes its ability to exist through rights. Countries establish their ability to exist through force, as America did. And so I think this question of right to Israel does exist. It's a fact. The question of its right is not a question that I would be faced with any other country.
So part of, you know, one of the things maybe I should have done here is I would have loved to have just played this interview and not told you maybe that there was controversy, because in re-listening to the audio and the questions here, look, this is a pretty civil conversation. He's asking tough, pointed questions. Coates is answering that. Now, he's full of, you know what, and this is a completely ridiculous, you know, if he claims to be a journalist, journalistically flawed piece of work that he's doing, not even mentioning a good portion of, you know, the players in the conflict, just blasting Israel. So they went on here.
But you write a book that delegitimizes the pillars of Israel. It seems like an effort to topple the whole building of it. So I come back to the question, and it's what I struggled with throughout this book. What is it that so particularly offends you about the existence of a Jewish state that is a Jewish safe place and not any of the other states out there?
This next question or this next answer is very interesting, and I think it's going to jump out at you here.
There's nothing that offends me about a Jewish state. I am offended by the idea of states built on ethnocracy, no matter where they are.
Okay, listen, like he even says,
Muslim included.
I would not want to.
Okay, Muslim included. Are you kidding me? If that's true, then what about all these Muslim nations in the Middle East? So, you know, he's talking out of two sides of his mouth right there. All right, so that brings us to yesterday morning. And if you would have watched that interview on CBS last week, maybe you would have thought, oh, wow, there's a guy from CBS, one of the most biased news organizations out there, that actually decided to do his job. Now, in fairness, and I'm going to get to this afternoon as well, I was shocked that Bill Whitaker actually asked some tough questions last night of Kamala Harris. So we'll get to that. So maybe there's some redemption here for CBS, but not when you really think about it in the whole scheme of what's happened in history. Let me offer you an example here. If you go back a few years to 2020 with George Floyd, and I've played this audio. I don't have it right now. We can certainly easily pull it. Gayle King comes on after the George Floyd situation. She knows nothing about the facts of the case. And I would argue to this day, she knows nothing about the facts of the case. And if you really want to know the facts of the case, watch The Fall of Minneapolis. From Liz Collin in her, you know, partners up in Minneapolis, because it is stunning. It's going to present a completely different side of that story. So Gayle goes on May 26, 2020, and says, I'm speechless. I really, really speechless about what we're seeing on television this morning. It feels to me like open season. And that's sometimes it's not a safe place to be in this country for black men. So, you know, she wants to go right into that without any of the facts whatsoever. And there's no repercussions for Gayle King. But Tony DeCoppel is the focus and the complete focus of a conference call with CBS higher-ups yesterday morning. And the great thing about this, there's a couple of great things about it, is the entire damn thing got leaked. And I'm going to play it to you here. So this was Monday at 9 a.m. yesterday. Keep in mind, this is October 7th. This is the anniversary of what happened with the Palestinians in Israel in this terrible terrorist attack a year ago, right? So they start by giving a couple of, you know, oh, we know it's October 7th, it's serious, blah, blah, blah. But then Wendy McMahon is on the call, and she introduces a woman by the name of Adrienne Work, who is in charge of news gathering at the network. Wendy McMahon is the head of CBS News, and it's kind of funny because she starts saying this when she starts the call.
Thanks, Adrienne, and good morning, everyone.
I'm sorry. No, Adrienne certainly hands it off to Wendy. So Wendy says this.
Thanks, Adrienne, and good morning, everyone. So Adrienne and I want to talk through a few things this morning. And I thank you in advance for keeping this meeting, this conversation today, confidential, which is, of course, always the expectation for this meeting, for every editorial meeting.
Oopsie.
And the fact is, we often use this meeting to share news with you. We want to continue to be able to do that. We want to protect and honor that trust. And I thank you.
Yeah, well, she's not going to thank them because now the New York Times and other outlets have done a story on this because someone leaked the call. So they go on here, and this is Adrienne, who says, look, we have a strong legacy here, and the policy is check your bias at the door.
I want to take the time
to remind us all of something. When we step into a newsroom and we pick up a microphone or a camera and we sit down for an interview, produce a story, report from a scene, or anchor a show, we need to remember that we are journalists. And as hard as this is, that means we set our personal feelings and beliefs aside. Our job is to serve our audiences without bias or perceived bias, to provide objective news that they, that we know and they know they can trust.
Isn't that great?
See, that's so perfect because Kenny's coming up. But, I mean, come on. Think about that. So there's a little history lesson of CBS News that they invoke as well.
You know, the legacy of CBS News is built on a foundation of neutrality. And we owe it to those who came before us, to ourselves and our viewers, to maintain that standard to the best of our ability.
So they go through the call, and then they finally get to the point where they want to out Tony DeCoppo, and they want to talk about this.
I want to acknowledge there are a lot of times that we do this really, and then there are times we don't. And there are times we fail our audiences, and we fail each other. We're in one of those times right now, and it's been growing. And now we are at a tipping point. Many of you have reached out to express concerns over recent reporting, specifically about the CBS Morning's Coates interview from last week, as well as comments made coming out of some of our correspondents' reporting. I want to thank every single one who reached out for your honesty, your transparency, and your commitment. So I want to address three things. Number one, after a review of our coverage, including the interview, it's clear there are times we have not met our editorial standards.
There was nothing at all wrong with that interview whatsoever. Actually, it was a pretty good spirited back and forth. I mean, Coates is full of crap, but there was nothing wrong with that interview. But you have these little snowflakes that are working at CBS News, and they complained about this. Now, ordinarily, maybe you just let this go and nobody says anything. Fred, you and I are on call sometimes, and I try to keep my mouth shut because I only get myself into trouble. But Jan Crawford is, and we worked with CBS, and you still do at CBS right. News. Jan Crawford is the chief legal correspondent and has been since 2009. And she comes in and smacks up her management upside the head.
So I guess it sounds like we're calling out one of our anchors in a somewhat public setting on this call for failing to meet editorial standards, or I'm not even sure what. Like, I don't understand how Tony's interview or any of his comments that he's made with anchors fail to, you know, meet our editorial standards that obviously go back to the days of Murrow and you know, Cronkite, which of course, I thought our commitment was to truth. And when someone comes on our air with a one-sided account of a very complex situation.
Yeah, in other words, he was actually doing what a journalist should do, not what a journalist should not do.
As Coates himself acknowledges that he has, it's my understanding that as journalists, we are obligated to challenge that worldview so that our viewers can have that access to the truth or a fuller account, a more balanced account. And to me, that is what Tony did. He challenged Coates' worldview, his one-sided worldview. Coates got to respond. It was civil. I mean, I'd have to look this up. I don't know if I'm quoting it exactly, but I read the Washington Post, and they said it was calm and, you know, heartfelt. I think those are the words they used.
They did say that. They thought it was a, you know, pretty civil discourse. It wasn't that big of a deal. So she closed this way.
When we broadcast false information or we don't adequately verify something, which we have done in the past, and we've acknowledged that. But here, I think Tony did the opposite. He prevented a one-sided account from being broadcast on our network about a deeply complex, as you said, situation that, you know, completely was devoid of history or fact.
So this is unbelievable. And, you know, for CBS and these two upper management news folks, supposedly journalists, to lecture Tony DeCoppo and to go on this phone call with a bunch of other snowflakes and say, we're going to really, you know, make sure that we're checking our bias. Are you kidding me? What did they say about Margaret Brennan and Nora O'Donnell, right? What did they say about Bill Whitaker coming in here to St. Louis? Now, he did something last night that was rather remarkable. He asked tough questions. But he's the same guy that for 60 Minutes, and what was the other idiot? Jeff Pegues, Fred, right?
Right.
Jeff Pegues came in here. They both came in and did a story completely devoid of facts and tried to paint St. Louis as white supremacists on the Kim Gardner story. They didn't dig in. They didn't. I even told Jeff Pegues, don't talk to me as a conservative. I'll give you Democrats who can't stand her and say that she's not doing her job. But they don't want the truth. They do not want the truth. And I don't think Tony DeCoppola is free of all this stuff either. But in this particular situation, he decided to ask some tough questions because he's Jewish. And I'm fine with that because I think at the end, by the way, there was a little, you know, light moment with Tony and Ta-Nehisi Coates. And I think they both survived it. That was actual good journalism. And they get outed for it and scolded at CBS News. That is embarrassing. Well, as I indicated, no Sue Thomas today. She's got jury duty, but we are loaded up, including a conversation in about an hour with Steve Jervey, who's actually a good friend of Sue's, used to be here at Channel 30, but he is a retired meteorologist at WFLA in Tampa, and he has been in Tampa for the past 25 years, and he's there right now bracing for Milton. So we'll hook up with him. We have Alana Austin in the next hour. She is a Kirkwood parent who had a unique experience in August with a middle school teacher who was flying a Palestinian flag and didn't want to put an Israeli flag up in his classroom and then also denied the Holocaust. So that's a fun story we'll get to here this afternoon. Charles Lipson at 5:07, Chris Elston, a.k.a. Billboard Chris, at 5:25. Kenny Wallace is back with us this afternoon, NASCAR legend, who I'm a little unclear if he's here or if he's in North Carolina. We're going to find out this afternoon. Kenny, how are you? Welcome back to the show.
I'm doing good, Mark. It's good to hear your voice.
Well, it's good to hear your voice. You know, I was thinking about something, and this may be a sad reflection on where we are with baseball, although you always are positive. We did not do the annual Mark Reardon, Kenny Wallace baseball game this year. I lost my motivation. It wasn't you. It was just the team.
Well, there's an old saying, there's always a next year. So we will do it again. And listen, I didn't think the Cardinals, I mean, it's not what we wanted. I think the fan base rebelled because Mo did not go after pitching last year, and then they didn't get what they wanted this year. But still, listen, we were over 500, and they are our Cardinals.
Well, this is why I depend on you for positivity, because I feel like it's the exact opposite. But we're going to agree to disagree on this. But what are you hearing? I know you're on your way to North Carolina, I think, but you're not going there for the hurricane. But what are you hearing from that area right now?
So I can report very well. I am in Charlotte, North Carolina right now. I was actually sitting in for Dale Earnhardt Jr. He's on vacation. He turns 50 years old on Thursday. So I did his big show, Dale Jr. Download on Dirty Mo Media. So when I left the show, I got on Interstate 77 South. That is coming from the mountains, from Asheville, where Hurricane Helene, did so much damage. It did a lot of damage, right?
Yeah.
But, so everybody's been rerouted because Interstate 40 is just demolished. Who would have ever thought a major interstate is caved in? So they diverted a lot of traffic, through Charlotte, and it was backed up. And, I mean, it just doesn't take anything. So saw a lot of recovery trailers. It's really simple. It wiped out towns and killed a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's not a deal where they're going to be there for a month or so. This is going to be years and years of rebuilding towns.
You know, there's so many little things, too. I mentioned this earlier, Kenny. So there was a story today. I didn't know this until my sister told me this. She's got a daughter-in-law who is training to be an anesthesiologist assistant. I think there's a more appropriate term for that, and I couldn't get it out and pronounce it. But anyway, she's doing training, and they need IVs, to do the training. Well, did you know, I didn't know this until today, the majority of IV fluids comes from North Carolina. A lot of it comes from Puerto Rico, but North Carolina had a facility that went down, and that's going to create issues for surgeries across the country. So there's all these little things. There's a friend of mine that works for the Fed out there, and she said in some of these towns, and you can understand this because you can't get there, they're having trouble getting money, cash, to banks because they can't get it there.
Yeah, and the other thing, Chimney Lake, I have friends that have B&Bs there, people rent things. They have people that are stuck in the rental homes. They're having to fly them out by helicopter. And here's what's crazy. As I say this, I'm thinking to myself, I can't believe I'm saying this stuff. in modern era,
yeah,
people are stuck in rental homes because the roads are caved in. Please send helicopters. And, you know, on the same note, but a little different story, Charlotte is a different situation because everybody comes up Interstate 95. Everybody leaves Florida. Everything just goes through travel through Charlotte as you're headed to New York. I learned that over the last 30 years, you know, lived here 27 years. But you're right, and I didn't know that one about IVs. It doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, that was an interesting little side note this morning as well. So we're getting reports. You mentioned the helicopters. I've seen some amazing interviews with helicopter pilots just basically begging for more helicopters, saying we need to get, you know, relief supplies to people and rescue people. There was one, I don't know if you saw this, there was a guy that was flying a helicopter and some dude who was trapped basically grabbed a vanity mirror from his garage and started flashing it in the air. And the, you know, the helicopter picked up that, or maybe it was a small plane pilot and they got rescued. But here you have a NASCAR connection, Kenny Wallace, with Greg Biffle getting very involved here and doing the same thing. You know, he sees a family running out of food and water at an Airbnb and hops in there and goes get some.
I'll tell you what, he is a superstar. That is the real Greg Biffle. You go back 5 years ago, we had a major hurricane, and he's a retired NASCAR driver, but he's got a heck of a machine shop, and he makes really nice, hard pieces that are tough to make. He's got great machinery. He has a brilliant mind. Well, he flies a helicopter for a hobby. But 5 years ago, he got in his pickup truck with a trailer full of wood and things like that, and he was just going to Florida because he thought that was the right thing to do. Now, 5 years later, and you just said the story, here he is, just for because he thought it was the right thing to do, he heard some friends that were stuck in the mountains. And then the story became all too real. It's like, in real, people can't get out. So he fired his helicopter up, and his wife, girlfriend, puts it on like social media, and that's all it took. They rescued somebody, took them, you know, diabetes medicine and things that they needed. And Greg Biffle is a dear friend of mine. I'm not name dropping. We're going to have him on the Kenny Wallace Show, which he'll be on probably Wednesday or Thursday. We're going to talk to him while he's not running his missions. So yeah, Greg Biffle is the real deal. He didn't do this because it is in his DNA to help people, and that is so rare nowadays.
Well, and, you know, going back to, you just mentioned this, but it is very difficult for me to believe that this is happening in this country right now, right? It's just, it really is kind of stunning. And by the way, it's about to get worse with this other hurricane down in Florida as well.
Yeah, and, you know, my wife, Uncle Bob, lives in Fort Myers. He left St. Louis years ago, all excited to move to Florida. And that poor guy, I don't know how many more hurricanes, he lives very close to the bridge that goes to Fort Myers Beach. We're checking on him, and I don't know what the latest is. But, yeah, I went to bed last night here at Mom's house in Charlotte, North Carolina, and they said that warm temperature there in the Gulf of Mexico is like wind speeds now up to 185 miles per hour. They're hoping it's going to weaken. But my friend flew Southwest Air last night, and he said that literally Southwest Air is kind of running, not missions, but term of speech, right? So they landed in St. Louis, and they came across the PA, and they said, please, you know, get off the airplane as quick as you can. We got to go back to Florida and keep picking up people.
Yeah.
So a St. Louis connection there, and that is from my friend Treb Jacoby. And he said it was the strangest feeling. He said they were ushering us out like cattle. Get out, get out. And so Southwest Air coming into St. Louis and going back to Florida. And they're just getting everybody out as quick as they can because everything shows that it's going to be one of the worst hurricanes. We hope it slows down, but last night it didn't look.
No, bad. I know, and you know, maybe the only I'm not usually one that looks for positives, but I will say this: North Carolina is probably heavily influencing these folks in Florida that might have been tempted to say, you know what, I'm going to ride this one out, and they saw what happened, and maybe they're taking this a little bit more seriously now.
Well, I hope so. You know, 185 mile an hour winds, and they're saying gusts over 215 right now in the ocean. That's what. No, that was last night around 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. So natural 185-mile-an-hour winds, 215-mile-an-hour gust, that is the real deal. That's no joke.
You know, and on recovery, I'll kind of close with this just because I was thinking about this earlier today. You know, we have this debate back and forth and this nonsense with this administration, you know, forgiving student loans. People signed on the dotted line, they took out loans, and they knew they were going to have to pay it back. How about this? How about telling people who had their homes and businesses wiped away by floodwaters in a hurricane that we're going to rebuild their homes? Because who's going to hold that against the government when we're trying to help American citizens, right?
All I can say is this. Politics has made it to where it's very hard for me to sleep at night, but I got to get this off my chest. It's going to be short and sweet.
That's okay.
If you vote a Democrat, that means you are not knowledgeable. It means you don't know what's up, because they're trying to make us be like this is wrestling. They're trying to make us believe that this stuff is not happening. They, as my mama would say, the Democrats are insulting my intelligence. It is just absolutely boggles my mind that anybody just wants to vote that way. It is so unbelievable that I can't even comprehend it. I mean, I really can't. And, I don't want to debate. I'm not going to debate because I do lose sleep. But all I can tell you is I know you got a lot of listeners. If you vote Democrat, that means you need to go back to school because you definitely ain't thinking right. And you don't hear. You don't hear. You have selective hearing. So that's off my chest, and that's it. And I didn't even have that plan.
Well, I loved it, and it's an effective way to close, Kenny Wallace. I miss you dearly. It's good to talk with you. You have a safe trip back here to St. Louis.
Lots of love, buddy. Talk to you later.
I think that message probably resonated with this audience, and I completely appreciate and love that he got that in there. By the way, on the IV fluids, this is, again, my sister brought this to my attention earlier today, and then I went and I Googled this, and there is a company out in North Carolina that's called Baxter International, and they issued a statement that says, as we previously shared, Baxter International's manufacturing facility located in Marion, North Carolina, sustained critical damage from Hurricane Helene and is currently closed for production. Baxter supplies approximately 60% of IV solutions used in North America. There are a good portion comes from Puerto Rico as well. But on their website right now, they actually offer guidance to physicians and nurses, like extend the use of IV and flush bags from 24 to 96 hours when changing tubing, eliminate use. Some of this is not going to make any sense to those of us who aren't in healthcare. Eliminate use of keep vein open protocols, limit quantities of IV bags placed in warmers because that would avoid early expiration. So this could certainly become a bigger crisis moving forward. And who would have thought of that in connection with a hurricane? We're coming back with much more. Sue's News done by Fred in the next hour. Don't forget about that. You know, I still think that Ron DeSantis would have been a pretty good president, and he is, I think, showing some really, really great leadership in Florida in a terrible situation. You know, he had one a couple of weeks ago. He's got another one that's really going to whack his state right now. But this is pretty interesting, too, the politics of all the hurricane stuff with Kamala. And I'll get into more of the CBS interview and how she embarrassed herself last night. And Tim Walz was maybe even worse, if you can believe that. But I love this because she's out on the stump and on the trail, and she's saying that Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, is refusing to take her call.
You know, moments of crisis, if nothing else, should really be the moment that anyone who calls themselves a leader says they're going to put politics aside and put the people first. People are in desperate need of support right now, and playing political games with this moment in these crisis situations, these are the heavy emergency situations, it's just utterly irresponsible, and it is selfish, and it is a political gamesmanship. It's that doing the job that you took an oath to do, which is to put the people first.
Okay, so she's so full of crap. And this is what I love about DeSantis, because he could be very sharp and pointed and have a great comeback. He doesn't get nasty. Let's face it, Trump gets a little nasty sometimes, but this was great.
Kamala Harris, to try to say that my sole focus on the people of Florida is somehow selfish, is delusional. She has no role in this. In fact, she's been vice president for 3.5 years. I've dealt with a number of storms under this administration. She has never contributed anything to any of these efforts. And so what I think is selfish
has she ever
is her trying
before?
To blunder into this.
So this is great. Did you hear that? I think that was Hannity. He's like, has she ever called before? Think about that. You know, she's been in office for 3.5, 4 years now, right? has she, when that hurricane whacked Sanibel and Captiva, what, did she call then?
No, she has no role in this process. I'm in contact with the President of the United States. I'm in contact with FEMA director. I'm obviously managing all our state agencies. We're supporting all our local government. And I will say this. I've had storms under both President Trump and President Biden, and I've worked well with both of them. She's the first one who's trying to politicize the storm, and she's doing that just because of her campaign.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt about it. And when pressed last night with in these, I mean, they were good questions. It wasn't like they were the toughest questions ever. She was awful. But when she wants to spit out a bunch of BS political stuff, well, that's what she does. I think that we're learning that's where her experience and her skill is. Some people have both. Some people can do the sharp political skills. I think DeSantis would be in that camp. But she can't answer questions. On the politics of all this.
This has the potential to be one of the most damaging storms in the history of our country. And can we not just focus on the livelihoods and the well-being of the people? Why is she trying to politicize this? Why is she putting her campaign ahead of the well-being of the people of Florida? We're laser focused on their well-being. This is going to be a massive effort. There's going to be things we're going to have to respond to that we've probably never had to respond in this kind in the history of our state.
Yep, it's going to, it really can potentially get bad. Now, I don't want to drag, again, this is uncomfortable, and I did it yesterday or last week a little bit too, just because there are realities with this election being 4 weeks from today. We know that North Carolina has been devastated. The infrastructure for getting people to vote, et cetera, that's going to be severely hampered. Maybe the same thing in Florida. So these governors, Roy Cooper in North Carolina, Ron DeSantis in Florida, have a lot of work in front of them just to make sure that their states can recover, that people can eat and drink and have electricity, et cetera. And then we got an election in 4 weeks. So I think there's already been a relatively big consensus that, you know, even if all things were perfect, there were no hurricanes that were devastating states, we probably won't even know the results of the election that night. This could prolong things for days, potentially. We're coming back. Second hour, Sue's News. Fred doing that this afternoon. Sue's got jury duty.
Get more at 971talk.com.